Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Manhunt by Gideon Marcus, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier and Zara Kand.
"Look sharp,"
she said.
"It could be any of them."
That's all it took, and the sea of anonymous faces, that rush of foot traffic through the station, became a menacing horde. The guy in the business suit, tie over long to hide a paunch, the hipster with full sleeves and slicked back hair, even the old fellow doddering down the way, fringes of hair around a pink pate. One of them was a man from Mars. I glanced over at my boss. For the umpteenth time, I sighed internally. The beige agency suits that worked for Simone's complexions made me look pallid, sickly. If I'd made it into the Secret Service, I could have worn black, which would have been an improvement. "What exactly are we looking for?" I asked. A teenager in a hoodie stepped past me to throw his gum away in a nearby wastebasket, and I had to resist flinching away. Some tough customer I was.
"Anything unusual. Agent Martin says they give themselves away pretty easy if you watch closely."
"How many people have they killed so far?" My eyes lit on a derelict plodding his way upstream through the hall, gray beard greasy and matted. The fingers on my right hand twitched.
"3 for sure. But it's not the deaths we need to stop. It's the spying."
"Yeah, it'll sure be easy finding a shapeshifter who can look like any man."
"Don't be sloppy, Carson. It could be a woman, maybe even a kid."
Her words were low, clipped. Great. Now everyone was a suspect.
"Anyway, it's not as hard as you think,"
she went on, less harshly.
"They're stuck in their forms for days on end, and it takes time to transform. Just look sharp."
Sweat dripped down my neck under the collar of my uniform, despite the chilly air conditioning. I needed to get it together. There were 30 agents in the cordon, spread out around a kilometer radius from where the diplomat was found unconscious, the telltale slime fresh and dripping on his open attaché case. Odds were low that the man, person from Mars or whatever, would come this way. And if they did, well, my hand twitched again towards the stunner at my hip.
2 o'clock, rookie."
My eyes flicked ahead and to the right. Oh man, if ever there was a suspect. He had curly hair and a mohawk, wearing trainers about 2 sizes too small for his spindly build. The guy was squinting, as if the lights were too bright, and he staggered like he was in a daze. Or the gravity was too heavy for him. I looked over at my boss, and she nodded. On that signal, we waded into the crowd. They parted for us. The agency had a reputation, and we quickly flanked the suspect. Startled, he tried to back away, but Simone grabbed one of his bony arms, with gloves of course, before he could bolt.
"Hey man,"
he yelped.
"What's going on?"
His SoCal accent was thick, and the special smell that informed me that no matter the time zone, it was 4:20 somewhere. I kept my hand on the grip of my stunner. It could be an act.
"Agency business,"
Simone said, whipping out her sniffer.
"Just stand still for a moment."
The commuters walked around us like we were a boulder in a stream, a couple of them stopping to watch as my partner ran the little device over the suspect's neck. I tried to keep an eye on him and the other on traffic, which is really hard unless you've got eyes on stocks like the Martians do when they're not playing dress up as people. The suspect yelped as the sniffer touched his flesh, and Simone gripped him tighter. We waited a tense moment while the device flashed through a cycle of colors. Then they settled on green, and there was a soft chime.
You're free to go. Thank you for your cooperation,
Simone said.
What?
She said, get moving. The guy shoved his hands into his pockets and staggered away, muttering something about bacon. I opened my mouth to say something when the call came through our earbuds. Found anything? Our supervisor. Prado's accent was unmistakable.
Nothing yet, boss,
Simone said. She didn't put her hand to her ear like they do in the movies, and her eyes scanned every face around her intently.
Negative all around the cordon,
the voice in our ears went on.
But Huang found a couple of traces. We're pretty sure the alien went your way.
Copy that.
Crap. The hallway was getting more crowded as the lunch hour approached. Most of the commuters wore suits. A few talked to the air like schizophrenics, only one side of their phone conversations audible. I wheeled left, then right. Everybody looked suspicious to me. We couldn't stop everyone.
Let's get out of traffic, rookie,
Simone said. It was a good idea. We'd get a better vantage that way. I turned on a heel to head back to the wall when a collision sent me flying.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I whirled around. A lady I hadn't seen in the crowd, probably because she was so teeny. She staggered to her feet. Old, dark glasses. At the end of the leash in her hands was a big, fluffy dog with an orange vest. The woman looked completely harmless. Too harmless. I tensed, reached for my stunner, and glanced quickly at Simone. She nodded and pulled out the sniffer again, running it quickly over the lady's head. The woman didn't seem to notice. The device chimed almost instantly, flashing green, and I let out the breath I'd been holding.
I don't know what happened,
the woman said, not looking at anything in particular.
I don't usually run into people.
She sounded like everyone's grandma. The dog was cute, too. He looked like the big mutt I'd had as a kid, and I couldn't resist giving him a pat on the head. The guide wagged its tail and opened its mouth in a doggy grin.
That's all right, ma'am,
Simone said, cucumber cool.
Do you need any assistance? Oh no, thank you. We'll be just fine, won't we, Rex?
The dog said. I beat Simone to the draw. To be fair, my hands were free. The Thrift Shop at the End of the World by Ben Coppin, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier and Zara Kahn. It had been bothering him for months. A stop sign rendered meaningless by a world whose end was inevitable and close as it was surprisingly calm. No violence, fire, or plague, just an orderly winding down, the Earth's sun setting. Less a stop, more a permanent ellipsis, like a sentence whose author was distracted and never came back to it. But a stop sign where no stop sign was needed? The greatest anachronism in a city full of anachronisms. It bothered him. When he first arrived in the city, he recognized the stop sign as a kindred spirit, alone, with no value to add, no purpose to serve. But later he caught himself talking to it and had to stop himself giving it a name. What next? Falling in love with a park bench? So he cut it down with the help of another anachronism, a circular saw. Which brought to mind his secondary complaint about the sign. Weren't stop signs supposed to be octagonal? Why was this one circular? Which bureaucrat had decided that a circular sign would be better? Perhaps it was less costly, less of a drain on an already overburdened city. But no matter. The saw made short work of the sign's metal stake, and the offending circle fell to the ground with a satisfying clang. but he couldn't just leave it there on the side of the road. And so the sign became his traveling companion. He walking, it dragging behind him. And just as he was ready to collapse, to give up on finding a home for it, he noticed the shop, its illuminated windows suggesting life, openness. His first reaction was irritation at another anachronistic folly. But then he saw her, tidying the window display. She was trying to balance a fluffy scarf on the round shoulders of a mannequin, without success. And there, in that shop window, he saw the answers to two problems. She watched him drag the sign to the door of her shop, but didn't move until he knocked on the glass. He attempted a friendly smile and hoped lack of practice didn't render it too close to the leer of a psychopath. She held the door open for him.
Would you like to come in?
He looked at her for a minute.
It's okay.
She smiled.
I'm friendly. And anyway, it's the end of the world. What's the worst that can happen?
He carried on looking at her, unsure what to do.
If you come in, I'll make you some tea, if you like.
I didn't...
You didn't think there were any women left.
Her acuity surprised him, and all he could do in response was to mumble.
Women and children first, they said.
She nodded.
Yes, they did say that. But it wasn't an order. Not legally binding. We still had a choice. So I stayed.
Say something.
But no words would come. Not from his mouth, at least. Not yet.
But please.
She said, rescuing him from his self-inflicted paralysis.
Come in, and bring your sign with you, if you want.
Which reminded him of his purpose. A purpose other than simply meeting someone, making a connection, ending the loneliness, getting this damn sign off the street. The tea was tepid, and of course there was no milk. No one left to milk the cows. But he drank it anyway. It seemed to make her happy, and it didn't taste bad.
Where have you been staying?
She asked him.
I haven't seen you before.
I keep to myself,
he said.
Mostly.
She nodded and sipped her tea. The conversation did not flow.
What about that stop sign? What's that about?
Oh, right. I wondered if you might buy it from me.
She smiled.
I'm not really in the buying business. We're a thrift shop for charity. People donate things they don't want anymore, and then other people buy them. Sorry.
It's okay,
he said.
I don't need the money anyway. You can have him if you're interested.
Him?
It?
I thought you said him,
she said.
It's the silence,
he told her.
Does strange things to the ears. You must have misheard me.
She laughed at that, and he felt something he had not felt for years. A tingling feeling in his neck and shoulders that meant he'd touched another person, made a connection.
In that case,
she said, still smiling,
I'll be happy to take it. Maybe someone will pass by tomorrow who has been looking for a sign and has almost given up hope of finding one.
His cheek twitched. Was she stupid? There were no people around here, not for miles. Just him and her. But he said nothing.
I need to lock up now,
she told him a little later.
Come and visit me again sometime?
You're pretty,
he said. Her eyes narrowed a little, but she didn't stop smiling. The next day, foraging for berries in an overgrown alley, he remembered what she'd said and slapped his forehead. She wasn't stupid, he was. He ran the mile or so to the shop, probably at a world record speed, for this year at least. He had to wait around the corner his hands on his knees, spitting out phlegm for 10 minutes before he could catch his breath enough to talk. He smoothed down his hair with saliva and fingers. She looked up from the counter when he came in.
"I hoped you might come back,"
she said.
"I hoped I might too,"
he told her.
"I've been looking for a sign for a while, and I'd almost given up hope on finding one."
Her smile was like a parade. He wondered if his heart might explode.
"Would you like some more tea?"
she asked him.
"I'd love some. Thank you."
And so, mostly happy, they spent the rest of their days together. Which wasn't many, but it was enough. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Manhunt by Gideon Marcus, with music by Fog Machine, and The Thrift Shop at the End of the World by Ben Coppin, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Be sure to check out our online store at bookshop.org/shop/spacecowboybooks. And don't forget to subscribe to Simultaneous Times Podcast. Also, find us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to hear what you think of the show.